It starts as a necessary arrangement, because neither Gable or Travis are particularly adept at the very simple notion of a conversation, and need an intermediary of sorts. Travis is very earnest in his ambition to have more conversations with Gable to try to work out the crux of their relationship. Travis is, in fact, more earnest about this endeavor than he has been in anything, and Margaret truly wants what's best for him. So when he asks for her assistance, naturally, she agrees. She is there to bear witness to their dire conversation moments before the Mariner arrives. And when Travis blurts out, "What is this?" and Gable, after many attempts at evasion, admits that they don't know. It's not the most promising start, but at least it's a start. Then they're all very busy staying alive, and it's not until afterwards, when Margaret is blinking back to consciousness on a ship in the skies, that she realizes they actually made it. More curious than her apparent survival are the other occupants in the bed. Travis, tucked at her feet as a beautiful white coyote, and Gable, curling protectively around both of them fast asleep. Travis's head is pillowed on Gable's legs, and he looks more peaceful than Margaret has ever seen him. She falls back to sleep with a soft smile on her face, content with the knowledge that not all hope is lost. Then, of course, the next day happens. "You lied to me!" "I evaded," says Gable, evading. Margaret sighs and very consciously places herself between the two of them. "You both could have been more honest with each other," she says, placating the best she can. "There is blame here on both sides. The only way you will ever surpass this is by honest and frank conversation. Do you think that's something you're both capable of?" "No," Travis snorts derisively. At the exact same time, Gable says, "Of course not. Don't be absurd." They catch each other's eyes over Margaret, and she tries to tamp down her smirk when they both share the kind of lovesick smile and fluttering eyes that only shy lovers are capable of achieving. At the next town, the other evacuees begin to make their way off the Uhuru, searching the port for transport and for missing posters or even for accommodation. Margaret, though, watches the proceedings with contemplation from high up on the deck. "Not going, are you?" Travis asks. "Why?" Margaret asks with a coy smile. "Would you miss me?" "Of course not," Travis drawls, only to trip over his own feet when a 7-foot being steps out of the shadows and cuffs him over the head. "Of course we'd miss you, Margaret," Gable infers. "Please stay." Margaret smiles. She knew this, of course, but it was still nice to hear. The three of them take to sleep in that same bed, the one that used to belong to the captain. But after one casual mention of it in the daylight that resulted in Travis curled up on the floor that night instead, Margaret realized this was a thing best not spoken about. She's there for their first kiss, naturally. Travis, shockingly, admits he cares. It's in the midst of an argument in the captain's quarters. "You had a chance, Travis. A real chance. To be mortal, and you, what, just decided to pass? I made you a promise, Gable. An actual promise, and that was hard. Margaret, wasn't it hard?" "Oh, incredibly, you were so brave," she says, only being a good 90% patronizing. Travis pulls a face and then turns back to Gable. "And I intend to keep it." "What? What promise?" "Oh, no, I can't do this. You have to stop being so dense. Gable, I told you." "Then tell me again. Perhaps I need reminding if I'm so dense." "Ugh!" Travis screams in frustration, turning on his heel and then back with even more fury. "You big stupid weirdo! I promised that I wouldn't leave you!" A silence befalls them after that, and Margaret looks between them, waiting to see whose tough exterior will crack first. Gable, as it turns out. Their throat bobs as they swallow. Their eyes are averted.
You gave that up for me?
Travis folds his arms and looks to the side. Yeah, I guess I did.
Why?
They whisper in awe. Travis shrugs and turns his gaze to the floor.
Made you a promise.
Right. Gable looks to Margaret with a panicked expression, clearly asking for help to break through to a closed-off Travis. Margaret sighs and speaks for him.
He cares about you.
Travis splutters indignantly. Careful now, care is a very big word, and I don't want their head getting all big and mighty just because I...
Do you?
What?
Care about me?
Of course, you're my friend, Travis defends, arms folded, eyes staring right at Gable, challenging them to disagree. Of course I care about you.
Travis,
Gable whispers, eyes darting between Travis and Margaret, like there's some answer to be found there.
What do you want from me? Travis suddenly exclaims, striding towards Gable. Do you want me to tell you that I care if you live or die? That you're my only friend in the world? That you're important to me?
At a certain point in this monologue, Travis's tone went from mocking to pleading, and Margaret genuinely couldn't say where. But by the time he's standing in front of Gable, his eyes are wide with something other than fury.
I can't do this alone, Gable, he says, throat bobbing and hands fidgeting. And I didn't want to leave you alone in this either. That's why I didn't do it.
Oh, Gable says, and Margaret watches in wonder as they blink and understanding seems to finally penetrate that thick skull of theirs.
Travis, can I kiss you?
Margaret doesn't know which of them is more surprised by Gable's outburst. Margaret chokes, Travis gasps, and Gable's eyes widen as if they weren't expecting those words to come from their mouth.
What?
Travis asks.
What?
That's your response to the whole... He waves his hand in the air. Really? Your big, dumb angel brain just boiled all those big emotions down to kiss now? Travis grunts, doing a really marvelous impression of their friend.
Yes. Got a problem with that?
In the face of Gable's unashamed and challenging question, Travis looks across at Margaret with panic.
What the fuck?
He mouths to her before turning back to Gable and shrugging.
No, I guess that's fine, but you're picking me up. I don't want to get neck strain.
Fine. Fine. Margaret rolls her eyes as the two immortal beings finally kiss in what has to be the least romantic line in history.
You both deserve each other, she mutters under her breath in disbelief.
She's startled when Travis breaks the kiss to murmur. And you're a part of this. Congratulations. Back at her. Gable chuckles against his lips, and then they're kissing again, and Margaret wonders at what point she became so involved in this relationship. That night, there's kisses in bed as well as cuddles, and Margaret thinks she really ought to give them their privacy one of these days, except every time she tries to leave, they just rope her back in again. She's there as items of clothing start to go flying. There between Gable's legs for some reason, and then she's kissing Travis and saving their lives and dusting lint from the fur of rabbit Travis and baking Gable a cake for their birthday even though they insist they don't have a birthday. And after a month or so of this nonsense in which neither of them have started a conversation about this, she figures she ought to.
So, she says, while they're watching the sunset together over the deck. Am I a part of this?
They both look at her like she's sprouted wings.
Of course you're... Don't be...
They catch each other's eyes over Margaret again, and this time she doesn't try to hide the smile.
Good,
she whispers,
linking their hands together as the sun sets on the horizon. Good. That's what I thought.